Hi, everyone. This is Kelly Swales. I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine Magazine. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Raksha, who is a pathology resident at University of Texas Southwestern, and she's going to talk a little bit about Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. What exactly is Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome?
Well, basically, it's a lower respiratory infection, also known as pneumonia, caused by a beta coronavirus, which is similar to a coronavirus that has been found in bats. Coronavirus strains also cause the common cold and may sound familiar to many of you, as it caused the severe acute respiratory syndrome outbreak that was in China during 2002 through 2003. However, the MERS strain of coronavirus is different from the one that caused SARS. The progression of this disease can actually lead to complications such as renal failure, multi-organ dysfunction syndrome, and consumptive coagulopathy, and ultimately death. It was first diagnosed in a male patient in Saudi Arabia who died in June 2012. He was initially admitted to the hospital in April of that same year, and then a second case came to attention when a man from Qatar was transferred to the UK for a higher level of care, and he was also diagnosed with a coronavirus illness, unknown at that time what coronavirus it was.
So how is the virus transmitted?
Well, it's actually suspected it's an animal-to-human transmission. In fact, just this last week, there was an article published in Emerging Infectious Diseases that stated the MERS coronavirus was found in one of 29 bat fecal samples from Saudi Arabia, near where the original index patient's home was. Now, this amount found in bat samples was not as high as the amount that was found with the SARS outbreak for their coronavirus, which they found about 10 to 12% of bats had that same strain of coronavirus. However, they're still considering that bats one of the hosts that carries the coronavirus. Now, due to the number of reported cases of MERS across the Arabian Peninsula, it is suspected that there are other hosts beyond the bat, so they're still conducting more research. And the original patient had no contact with bats. However, even if you don't have contact with bats, there may be some aerosolized virus from dried guano. There have also been several reports of human-to-human transmission, and this occurred with close family contacts and also with healthcare workers. Because of the risk of the human-to-human transmission, patients should be placed in an airborne infection isolation room and present to their clinician as soon as possible if they suspect they have MERS coronavirus.
How many people have been diagnosed with MERS? I know that it's an emerging disease, but how many have been diagnosed?
It's very new, but as of August 21st, 96 people have been diagnosed with it. Now, 76 of those cases have been from Saudi Arabia, and the remaining cases have been diagnosed from patients who have been to the Arabian Peninsula and then traveled to Europe or who live in the Arabian Peninsula. As of August 21st, there have been no cases reported in the United States. The mortality rate right now is really high. It's 49%, with 47 people dying from the disease, compared to SARS, just because it's the last coronavirus outbreak we can compare this to. There was only a 10% mortality rate. As of now, the median age of the patients is 56, but has ranged from a 2-year-old to a 94-year-old patient.
When should people be concerned if they have MERS?
As of right now, the Center for Disease Control put out a recommendation that any patient who develops a fever and pneumonia within 14 days of traveling from the Arabian Peninsula should be evaluated for MERS. So go to their clinician and make sure that the clinician knows of any of their travel history. In addition, if they've had contact with a patient who's been symptomatic and traveled from the Arabian Peninsula, they should also be evaluated. And any patient who does go to their clinician to be evaluated for MERS should be immediately reported to the Center for Disease Control.
What samples should be obtained from the patient for diagnostic purposes?
Well, it's really important to get a lower respiratory tract specimen if possible, as they contain a higher titer of virus. And these specimens can include sputum, endotracheal aspirates, or bronchial lavage. If that's not possible, they can take nasopharyngeal or aeropharyngeal swabs. Now, if initial testing is negative and the suspicion is still high, the CDC recommends repeat testing to be performed. The specimen should be collected within 7 days of onset and before any antiviral therapy has been initiated. In addition, stool specimens are acceptable. Any lower respiratory or stool specimen can be held at 2 to 8 degrees Celsius and not frozen for less than 72 hours, but anything over 72 hours needs to be frozen. And as of right now, PCR is being the most widely used test for detecting the virus. You can collect blood for serology, and it should be collected. If the infection is recent, then you need to take one sample and then wait at least 3 weeks and take another sample to see if there's an increase in titer. And then if the patient's symptoms have been present for more than 3 weeks, then one sample of blood for serology is enough. Now, blood should be collected and or 10 mils of blood in a heparin or green top tube or EDTA purple tube and refrigerated. So you should not freeze the serology specimens as you should freeze the lower respiratory tract or stool specimens after 72 hours. Now, in addition to these specimens being collected, it's very important that the healthcare workers know to wear proper personal protective equipment. And these specimens should be sent to a Biosafety Lab 2 facility and be run in a microbiology safety cabinet class 1, 2, or 3. And viral culture should not be performed outside of specialized labs with BSL-3 capabilities. Now, if there's any sample that tests positive, it should be genetically sequenced. If the tests are not being sent to the CDC and the labs are trying to perform these tests on their own and they do not have the capability of running genetic sequencing, then it should be sent to the appropriate reference center.
Are there any travel advisories?
Well, as of July, this is actually not considered a public health emergency yet. So there has not been travel advisories for Hajj, a pilgrimage to Mecca, and that takes place in October this year, October 13th through 18th. However, Saudi Arabia has recommended the following postpone their pilgrimage this year, and that would be people over 65, children under 12, pregnant women, people with chronic diseases, people with weakened immune systems, and people with cancer or terminal illnesses.
Thank you for talking with us a little bit today about MERS. I know that it's a very interesting topic and potentially scary. You know, right now it's very localized, obviously, in the Middle East, but it's something that we need to all be aware of, and it's something that we all need to be transparent about because it could be a very serious outbreak for all around the world.
Yes, it very well could be. So, and they just want people to be very, like you said, transparent. If they feel like they're having the symptoms or they've been around people who have been symptomatic, just to go to their doctor immediately.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.